And we have begun.
What are the benefits of a long-term meditation practice? What do long-term meditators experience during meditation? And what are some of the effective strategies to keep you motivated? Welcome. This is HTPA's Energy Medicine in the Spotlight teleseminar series about the growing connection between science and biofield approaches to health and well-being. In the next hour, we'll explore these questions, plus helpful no-nonsense approaches for our practitioners. This session, our guest is Dr. Lynn Shamer. Introducing your host.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Ramona Rollberg, co-producer of Energy Medicine in the Spotlight and a certified healing touch practitioner. With me tonight, our co-producer and co-host, Dr. Renee Roll-Watley, who's also a certified healing touch practitioner, and Don Warnicka, who you've been talking to already. She's currently our acting executive director of the Healing Touch Professional Association. Now, I want to thank you for being with us tonight, but if you haven't already heard, the 2016 Energy Medicine in the Spotlight series is going to be dedicated to exploring the growing connections between energy medicine, science, and spirit. These calls are sponsored by the Healing Touch program to support both our members and interested community members who want to build, maintain, and expand their energy practices. I want you to know this call is recorded. It's going to be posted on the HTPA Association website, and you'll be able to download it there or listen to it. We have a wonderful teleseminar planned for you tonight in this inaugural presentation. Renee and I are going to be interviewing our guests this evening, after which there's going to be plenty of time for you to ask your questions. So I'm going to suggest that, well, if something comes to mind during the interview segment, why don't you see if you can just jot it down so that you don't forget, and then you can ask it later by pressing star 2 on your phone. And that's going to raise your hand so that we can see if you have a question. Now, if you're listening via the web, you can type in your questions anytime, just like you've always been doing. And Dawn is going to be monitoring that web access portal for us. So, okay, now, our guest tonight is Dr. Lynn Shamer. She is a mind-body specialist teaching complementary and integrative medicine and related topics at Saybrook University in California. She founded Praxis Wellness in Life and Work. That's a wellness practice specializing in mind-body approaches to life. She's a certified hypnotherapist. She's an EFT master trainer and a Reiki master. Now, she's going to bring each of these approaches into her work and probably into what she talks to us tonight about as she works also with her clients in her private practice. And she works with clients who have concerns that range from physical discomfort, addiction, anxiety, depression, all the way to the other end of the spectrum to peak performance and flourishing. She is the co-founder of EFTfree.net, and that's a nonprofit website and organization devoted to EFT and mind-body education. So, let me say, Lynn, welcome to the MIT.
Hello, thank you. Well, it's great to be here.
I'm so glad that you're with us tonight. Hey, let's get started. I know that you're a long-term meditator. Why don't you just sort of give us a little bit about your journey, a little bit about your background. Is it a family tradition? How were you exposed to meditation?
Sure. I came to meditation because I was too stressed out to deal with my usual life, and I had heard such good things about meditation that I was intrigued. So in the neighborhood of, it's 12 and a half years now ago, a friend of mine strongly suggested that I started meditating, and that's how I began. It was very simple. I turned on a cooking timer and sat for 5 minutes. That was my very first meditation set about 12 and a half years ago, and I went on to explore it in great depth. I've been a daily meditator since that time and have explored many different traditions and have my own practice every day. So,
well, that's fantastic. Wow, over a decade then, you've been able to discipline yourself mm-hmm. enough to do this every day, huh? So that mm-hmm. kind of makes sense. I mean, in 2015, when Renee and I were looking around for suitable presenters for this new immense effort here, your article came across my desk. You published this article in the Journal of Humanistic Psychology, calling it Calm abiding, the lived experience of the practice of long-term meditation. And that caught my interest because there wasn't a lot that I had come across that had been written about the practice and the experience of long-term meditation. So, you know, it's, since our goal in this particular series is to link what we know in science with biofield therapies and spirit, meditation seems sort of a natural technique to have on our program. So maybe you could start with a definition about how do you define meditation, and how did you use it in your work?
Sure. The you know, meditation, one of the things that's wonderful about meditation is that because it is very much a part of many people's practice, and it's been part of the scientific exploration now in a very formal way for more than 50 years. And so this is one of the mind-body medicine techniques or energy medicine techniques that has been quite thoroughly studied in formal research. And it's wonderful for those of us who are trying to link science with our regular practices and as practitioners. So we have a very good foundation in meditation work. Meditation is deeply rooted in human history. Historical evidence goes back to at least the third millennium before the Common Era. And it's likely just a part of the human impulse. It has transformed itself over the years and into many practices into what has essentially had been a spiritual practice and a religious practice, particularly in Asian or Eastern traditions. It is likely that that was that came into the Western tradition, the Western Judeo-Christian tradition, probably the Christian tradition, through the Desert Fathers and Mothers, probably through exchange along the Silk Route. And some of that early history, of course, is lost to us. It wasn't documented. But what we now know is that there are a variety of ways to sit in an intentional way, to be in an intentional way, and we call that meditation. For the purposes of my study, what I wanted to do in my work, I wanted to look at human transformation. I wanted to look at the types of meditation that gave the most benefit to the individual. Meditation is an umbrella term. You'll be able to find on any given day or dictionary 100 different definitions for meditation. But for the purposes of studying it formally, I chose to define meditation as silent meditation done in a formal, intentional way. So this isn't guided meditation. This isn't sort of walking along and then saying, well, I had a quiet walk today, so I think that was my meditation. But rather, this is an intentional practice done with the intent of sitting in silence. And people in my study used a number of different types of practices. My interest was looking at what the experience was and not a particular school of meditation. So the people in my study had practiced for a minimum of 10 years daily, and each of them had a silent meditation practice. So that's how I defined it, but that doesn't mean that that's the only way to define meditation. It's just that what we found in the research, as I was beginning to do my study of who has done this work before me, and there have been, fortunately, thousands of very good studies about this, is that the meditative practices that benefit people the most are the silent, intentional practices.
Where
people go inside. Now, this doesn't mean that the practices that include a mantra aren't good. They're fabulous. And the practices that might include a ritual use of a chime, those are all a part of this. But this is for deep, silent meditation practices, not yoga, not swimming and then calling it meditation later, not a guided talk.
So let me break in here and ask, you know, as far as our understanding from the science of trying to quantify the benefit of meditative practice. Your paper discussed that there were categories of benefit. Do you know what I'm talking about? Physiological benefits. Can you talk to us a little bit about those strictly kind of well-known side effects?
Yeah, very briefly. If you Google benefits of meditation, there's thousands of results that you'll see. One of the easiest ways to look at it is to look at physical benefits, psychological benefits, and neurological benefits. Physical and neurological obviously overlap because we're talking about the brain and the brain structures. But what we know is that silent meditation improves cardiovascular health. It reduces pain. It reduces the stress response. There are beneficial effects on pain, attention, sleep, and well-being. And researchers have noted that there are lasting global effects on quality of life as well. There are positive effects there are positive effects in the areas of oncology as well as in the area of the cardiovascular problems. For example, with cardiovascular issues, blood pressure generally goes down in meditators. And this is a really powerful and important finding. The immune system is improved by regular meditation. Meditation may be specific in its ability to down-regulate negative, distractive, ruminative thoughts. And so then we segue into psychological benefits. There have been studies that have indicated and shown cognitive improvement, cognitive flexibility, self-compassion, well-being, lowered negativity, increased positivity, decreased negative affect, and so on, increased personal agency and well-being. These are really powerful findings. And then moving quickly into the neurological benefits, obviously there's an overlap with physical, but just to focus on the brain, because this has been a very exciting area of study in recent years, once we found out that the brain was plastic, the exciting news recently, within the last few years, 10 years or so, 20 years or so, has been that the brain is plastic even into adulthood and throughout our lives. So with meditation, this is formal daily meditation, there are changes in the brain structure in just the areas that we would want them to change. So there is increase in the cortical region, an increased thickness of the cortical region. So these are areas that are specifically related to emotional, cognitive, and sensory processing. It has been indicated by a number of studies now, too, that meditation, because of its increase, because of the way it increases cortical thickness, it is slowing age-related thinning of the frontal cortex. This is very important. So also meditation.
So it's slowing cortical thinning. That's another way of saying your brain isn't shrinking. Is that right?
That your brain what? Sorry?
Is not shrinking.
Your brain is not shrinking. Yes, this is incredibly important. We're finding that the brain age of meditators is younger than the brain age of non-meditators. And the work is exciting, very, very exciting.
Lynn, let me interrupt here. Do you have any idea from the research, the body of research, how long it might take that we have to sit in meditation in terms of weeks or months before some of these neurological benefits actually take place?
In fact, no, we don't. The first hint of cognitive shift probably happens early on, even as quickly as 8 weeks. There's perceptive benefits. The very robust increases in cortical thickness are the result of long-term meditation. And I was asking one of the primary known researcher, Sarah Lazar, about this recently in the Society of Integrative Oncology conference that I was at, and she was a keynote at that conference. And I said, what do I tell my clients who want to know how long it takes for them to get some of these benefits? And she said, tell them to start sitting, and it begins. And mm-hmm. we don't have a cutoff date for how long it takes to get the cortex to get fatter and thicker. But mm-hmm. the more you do, the better it gets.
Well, it seems to me, you know, as energy medicine practitioners, and we're always dealing with people who are in significant amount of pain, are dealing with a lot of anxiety, or want to reduce the stress in their lives, that in addition to the techniques we might be employing that we're specialized in, suggesting maybe to improve or to include some sort of meditative practice, then would be sort of like a no-brainer.
Absolutely.
Right?
I do this with all of my own clients. And for I also have a client body who is, my clients are mostly middle-aged or older, and many, many people are now concerned with cognitive decline and don't want to lose function, of course. And the growing body of research that we have shows that meditation can enhance many cognitive functions, including attention, memory, and executive function. It's very exciting work. And it because it does also downregulate anxiety, it downregulates the stress response. Our clients benefit greatly. This is a huge enhancer. We also know that, and we'll move into this in a moment as we get into the lived experience, but research is also backing up what people have known through anecdotal evidence for many, many years, in that there's a reason meditators are often sort of depicted as monks. We don't have to be monks to meditate, but we know that a kind, loving kindness increases. The areas of spiritual mastery increase. The ways that we want to improve in, as people generally, whether we're practitioners or often for many of us, our clients come. They want to grow spiritually as well as have decreases in anxiety. Meditation supports all of that hope for transformation.
So let's move on to what you've done and bring us up to date. What brought you to the area of interpretive phenomenology?
Interpretive phenomenology is a very good qualitative research method that allows one to ask open-ended questions so that instead of coming to the participants with a preformed idea or hypothesis, came to them with open-ended questions about their meditation practice to see what would really come up. So out of that came eight themes and then their own stories and narratives about what it was like for them.
Ramona, Lynn, Renee here, I'd like to just go ahead and interrupt just one moment. We have a question here about what the research was, and I'd like to just to give a name out here. It was Sarah Lazar. If anybody has a pencil and a paper and they want to take a look at this research for themselves, the paper, the author of the paper, researcher, the primary
L-A-Z-A-R.
Researcher.
L-A-Z-A-R.
Right. And it was done in 2005, which I believe is the first year that paper came out. You could probably just
Google
it. That
was the first year that paper came out, yes.
And,
there have been a number of, Lazar is continuing to do work in the field. So some of the people to read in terms of the neurocognitive research are Lazar and Davidson, D-A-V-I-D-S-O-N, so Davidson et al., 2003, And Davidson has a lab at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. They're doing very exciting work. There was a great review article by GARD, HOLZEL, and Lazar, LAZAR, same woman, 2014. That was a review article about the enhanced cognitive functions as a result of meditation. So, and Luders et al. Is also doing work in this field of cognitive benefits, L-U-D-E-R-S.
Okay. Thank you for that. I would also like to mention the paper that you had mentioned in your reference section by Natalia Moroni. It was on chronic pain, and I know many of us healing practitioners are dealing with our clients who are in chronic pain, and it would be something that our participants this evening might be interested in looking up for themselves. It was definitely a paper about how meditation can affect older
dealt with
adults
chronic
with
pain.
Chronic
that was
pain.
One of the issues. Mm-hmm. That was Moroni et al.
Right, in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So before we go on with your particular study and the eight themes that you came up with, let me just summarize briefly for our audience what we came up with. You told us that we have evidence-based research that tells us that there are physiological benefits to meditation, which includes, for example, stress reduction, and there are cognitive improvement benefits, for example, perceiving more clearly, psychological benefits, improved compassion, increased self-awareness, and then there are also those neurological benefits like the thickening of the cerebral cortex and the slowing of those age-related thinning in the frontal cortex. All this comes from regular meditation. Did I get that right? Did I summarize that completely?
You did, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, great. Then let's continue on.
Yes. So you said that out of the research that you did, eight overlying themes emerged that talk about what, long-term experience
correct.
Throughout the last decades of work. So why don't you tell us something about those?
Yes. I'll just quickly go through the themes, and then we can circle back and talk more specifically about what each one or what were the most interesting ones from your perspective. The first theme was consistent and mindful adherence to ritual and technique. The second was the role of a teacher. So these were all things that came up as being very important to these meditators. The third was cultivation of self-awareness. The fourth was increased equanimity, compassion, and acceptance of self and others. The fifth was transcendent peak experiences. Sixth was cultivation and deepening of personal spirituality. Seventh was life purpose and meaning. And the eighth theme that came up was challenges and barriers, because everybody has difficulty with it. And I think go ahead. Yes?
Well, I was just going to ask you, of those eight, did they all just sort of pop out, or did it take some time to massage the data to find these correlations?
This is a very long process, as I believe you know. What happens is there are a number of interviews that take place, and then I go back through with a recording of the interview, with transcripts of the interviews, and I comb all of the things that people say, and I then gather them into what seem to be emerging, from my perspective as a researcher, into themes. So these are the shared themes. These are the themes that are shared among all of the participants in the study.
Wow. Pretty impactful. I mean, I'm trying to remember what it is that you said. Of course, let's go through them all. But if I remember listening to it, I'm hearing a lot of things that we as energy medicine practitioners are also concerned with. So I think that there's this synergy going on here that's really interesting. So tell us about your first couple of ones. What's going on there?
One of the first ones is just the consistent and mindful adherence to ritual and technique. We don't need to spend much time on that. That's something that's it's simply that daily discipline is important, and it's a good thing. It's calming. We set this time up intentionally. It's not scattershot. It is intentional. It's a part of these people's daily routines. It is as routine as brushing your teeth in the evening or starting your day. I mean, it is just absolutely a part of the day. So this is important.
And different people have,
it's an absolute priority. And it's an absolute given. It is something that does not get decided every day. It happens as a part of the day, basically. I'm not saying it's easy for those people, but who have done this, but it is just an ordinary part of daily life that they have made a priority. And the second theme is the role of a teacher. And for many of the practitioners, many of them still work with a teacher, even after decades in some cases. And for many, they said that starting with a teacher was important. So it was all over the board, but I think at least at least two-thirds of the participants found that the role of a teacher or a mentor was important. And what one of them said, for example, that it is really helpful to have a guide who can make things normal and put it into perspective and help you understand what this really means. And another said, a guide is what you're looking for. You need someone to guide you through. So the importance of that companioning and deeper experience was key for many people. Mm-hmm. Another aspect mm-hmm. of what our meditators experience, what my meditators experience was, this is very important, is the cultivation of self-awareness. People had a deeper sense of themselves about what's going on in their lives. So one of my participants said, for example, I have a much greater sense of what's going on inside of me and what my responses are, which things trigger me, what's happening in my body. So therefore, more of the time I know where I am and I'm not driven as much to behaviors that are harmful to myself or to people around me. That's really beautiful self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And another said, meditation has made me see more clearly both my ability to relate to others and how others relate to me. It's just a calm. I'm more calm. I'm more empathetic and so on. There were these very powerful expressions of self-awareness. And often it also translated into or morphed into compassion at the same time. Which is the next the emergent theme that came up. There was this whole area of powerful increase in equanimity, so calm, in compassion, mm-hmm. and in both self-acceptance and acceptance of others. These are really important areas of spiritual mastery. One of the people said, I think I've softened over the years gradually. I'm less reactive more of the time. I saw that it was helping me, meditation, not only giving me a time out, which is always nice, but it was really changing me. And each of the participants had these very wonderful experiences of being calmer, of being at ease, grounded, centered, joyful. Was often mentioned.
You know, it's so interesting, Lynn, as I'm listening to you talk to us about what these meditators experienced. These are some of the same words, Dawn. Aren't these some of the same words that we hear when we're in classes and we're learning about grounding and attuning, or we're with our clients and we're connected in a way that, you know, it's not like we necessarily expected it, but it's just as if it's these two beings sort of came together in a mutual experience and exchange. I mean, I'm hearing, calm, compassion, self-acceptance. Those are things that we're always striving for in our own ourselves, but also to make us better practitioners, it seems to me to be. And so I just can't even imagine how not having it, I mean, it would be, seems to me like an essential component or complement to becoming a better healing touch practitioner, energy medicine practitioner, whatever, you know, you practice, is to become more aware of your inner life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. I think that's very important. I think that I know my own experience. I started with meditation many, many years ago in my own practice of energy medicine with clients. I've gone through a number of techniques. I use a number of techniques, many of which you listed as we were beginning. And one of the paths that I have found helpful is using Reiki. And as you know, there are many, many similarities to healing touch. And what I noticed was that as I deepened my meditation practice, my energy opening was much greater. And this is simply anecdotal. We don't have formal research on this yet, although I think it would be very interesting to do. But I can feel an increase in the outpouring of the Reiki, in this case, in my case. And I believe it's greatly to do with my long-term sitting in meditation. I suggest whenever I train people, I always request them to begin a meditation practice if they haven't already done it. It's just so beautiful. And to segue a little bit as I move into some of the other themes here, again, this is a very rich area. One of the things that was very it was surprising and not surprising to me, my own personal experience was that meditation has deepened my spiritual practice. It has opened up transcendent and peak experiences. It has opened up those, you know, those channels so that beautiful healing energy can move through us, through me. Mm-hmm. But this was also reflected in the experience of my participants. And these were not people who, they were not in a religious tradition. This was not a religious exercise or an inquiry into religion. This came up completely spontaneously. Every single person in the study had experienced transcendent and peak experiences. And where I think this links to healing touch, and I know only very little, I have a great regard for healing touch. It's a beautiful, beautiful healing technique. I've been fortunate to have people work on me, and it is transcendent. It is beautiful. Those words that you were just mentioning of calm and joyful, those things happen in those sessions. And I believe there's an opening. I believe there's an awakening within as a result of meditation, and I believe that practices such as healing touch can further open those beautiful channels for healing and for wholeness. I think that the two are beautifully complementary, these two practices, meditation and healing touch and other energy medicines. And I believe they build on each other just beautifully.
Wow. Well said. Well said. So let's see. We talked about cultivation of self-awareness. What about your deepening of personal spirituality?
Yeah. Yes, this is a lovely area. There was transcendent peak experiences, as I mentioned. It was very exciting to see. I'll just read one quote from there. So a person who was saying, who did not consider herself really very spiritual at all, in her own words. She talked about being on retreat, and it just happened that she was on a meditation retreat during the terrorist events of September 11th, 2001. And she said that it was, you know, it was greatly emotionally upheaval and awful. It was awful. It was on the East Coast. Many people had loved ones in uncertainty. But she said that there were these waves of pain and then also these waves of peacefulness. She said it was almost like waves of energy washing over. And as she put it, there's a dissolving of the particularity of one, and it can sometimes lead into a sense of peacefulness and oneness with the world. And this was during a very difficult time. Another said, I'm floating, and that's the word I'm looking for. It's a floating sensation, a connection with something greater. Another said that she experienced visual accompaniments to the felt experience, including images of spiritual beings and beings of light and experiences of light. So these are quite mystical. Another said she routinely experienced mystical and transcendent experiences. And these are without looking for it. The notion is not to, you don't sit in meditation looking for that by any means, but these are our side benefits, you know. And then what happened for each of the practitioners, each of the participants, was that there was a deepening of personal spirituality. For one, a search for spirituality was at the beginning of her quest for meditation, and she felt that there was something lacking in the contemporary, very consumer-oriented society that she finds herself in, that we all find ourselves in, and she found it in the meditation community. She sensed that there was something not being addressed in the world, and she wanted more than that. And she felt this sense of acceptance and a sense of this beautiful long tradition that could give her a depth that she was hoping for. Another said, and so I sit, and all this starts to happen. I suddenly start going inside, and when it happens, I think you feel a sense of being one with the universe, a sense that you've always been and you always will be. It's sort of a timeless awareness, timeless death. And you begin to see that your own problems, your current problems, you just sort of metabolize those problems within the vastness of space, and so on. It's just so lovely. There's this deepening and a sense of being held often. And sometimes these experiences happen during the meditative sit. Sometimes what happens for people is they experience a sense of oneness and connection at greater frequency throughout the rest of their day and their life. So sometimes it happens during the sit, but often it will happen later on during the day. There's a sense of peacefulness. And that's also very beautiful, because it's important to know that the fruit of the meditation is very often outside of the sit, and that's what we're going for, of course, so that we have these benefits, not only during the however many minutes or hours we sit in meditation, but in our relationships, in the rest of our lives, in the deepening of our own spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the last ones in this area that I found very meaningful and powerful is that for many people, meditation shapes and defines their life and their life purpose. One woman particularly said that meditation was her religious practice. It was her spiritual practice. It became the prime anchor in her life. And she talked about how she said that meditation has been a lifesaver for her and an anchor. And for another, she said, it gave me a sense of total connection. And it was a passage, she said, for me, the passage from life to death is not really a passage from life to death. It's just another life, a passage from life to another life. It's like going home. And meditation for this person created a foundation for her. Another said that it validated my view of life, that we are here to learn some things, and those things are about lifting my consciousness to another level. Another said that it was a way of being. The practice of meditation is a way of being. It's a way of living, because if you live in this nature of your natural mind, then it's simply a way of being. Another in my pilot study had talked about meditation as being as deep and important as marriage. It's very powerful, these ways of being in meditation.
So let's talk about, these just profound
possibilities and potentials for improved, you know, spirituality, transcendent and peak experiences, a cultivation and deepening of self-awareness. These benefits, you know, they're just kind of so wonderful to think about being included in. But then you have to sit down every day.
Yes.
You know?
Very fast.
And then you have to do the day. You have to walk the walk, right? And
yes,
oftentimes
absolutely.
That's hard. That's just so hard. Are there was there any advice that you gleaned that would help motivate us to do this every day? What keeps you doing it every day?
You know, it's been so long now that it feels odd not to do it. So for me, the practice encourages the practice. And actually that has been found to be true. Many of the meditators found that it just felt like something was missing if they didn't practice. For people who are just beginning to sit, it's helpful to have a teacher. It's helpful, and even this can be even informal. It's helpful to go to a meditation group or class. It's helpful to meditate with other people. I did not have that really as an option early on in my meditation, and I just was so compelled by what I was seeing even in popular literature, because back then I was not a PhD student even, and I was just an interested person. So it was becoming available. The brain studies were showing up on Time magazine, and I found that so compelling that it was enough of a boost to me to get started. But many people will say that they found it so helpful early on. There are benefits early on, even from the beginning. You asked about this earlier as we were talking. Even from the beginning, there's a beginning of a quiet that happens. And people experience positive physiological benefits like lowered blood pressure pretty quickly. So those can be early positive incentives to keep people going. It's also helpful to know that the barriers to meditation, or what we call them kind of formally, is that everybody goes through them. It's just normal. So, you know, for some people, every single day they think, ugh, do I really want to sit? Ugh. And they do. It's like, yeah, I do. I'm going to do it. And for other people, as I say, it's more like brushing your teeth. You just sit down, you put the timer on, and you do it. And and people, I think it's important for people to know, especially beginners, that it doesn't matter that your mind wanders. It doesn't matter that you have to come back to whatever your focus is, the breathing or silence, however you do your meditation practice. That's normal for everybody. Minds wander. We think, oh, I wasn't meditating. I was thinking about something. That's okay. Just come back. Come back. And one of the most important things is to be gentle with ourselves and to be really encouraging. Another important thing is if you're just a beginner, if you're very new at this or want to restart your practice after a time, put the timer on. Use a timer. I use the Insight Meditation Timer that's available on a smartphone. So you have a chime that goes on, and you can choose your own bell, which for some reason delights me. And you turn the timer on so that you're not looking at a clock. And the chime goes, and set it just for 5 minutes if you're beginning. Just set it for 5 minutes. Really be gentle with yourself. Don't set yourself up for a 3-hour meditation when you're first sitting. And then just increase it gently over time. And think of this as a gift that you're giving yourself. You're giving yourself the benefit of better brain quality over your life, a better physiology over your life, and a better cognitive flexibility, and all of those other things that we were discussing early. And those benefits are so powerful that can often be a good incentive, just those themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's, in some ways, I'm thinking back to the class. I think it's a level three class where we're learning the, and get, tell me if I'm right, Don, where we're learning the hara alignment. Is that in level three, right?
Yes,
it
that's
is. Yeah. Yep. You know, and in some ways, that's a way of tuning into our higher power. And you mm-hmm. need to practice doing that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems to me, having discussed it with you know, practitioners who can sort of move into their alignment, you know, very, very quickly when they're with clients. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning, it's something that you need to make the commitment to learning how to do, because being able to be in tune or attuned in this way helps you to get out of the way when the energy comes through you with greater ease,
right.
So that it's more beneficial to you and to the client. So I think that meditation, sitting there and learning what does it feel like for you to be in the flow, helps mm-hmm. to also then motivate you to go back to it. It's like, oh, this looked really good. This felt great.
Absolutely.
I want to do that again.
And you bring up a really good point about, you know, that so many of you all who are listening right now are already such gifted and, frankly, very disciplined people. I mean, this is, you who have studied healing touch, and many of you are, you know, so many different levels, all these different levels, and there's a lot of intention. There's a lot of personal investment in the training that you've all been going through. And you have dedicated yourselves to a very powerful healing technique. I mean, it's a very powerful healing technique. And it takes time. You have to go to classes. You have to practice on your own. You have to practice with clients. You have to, you know, really, mm-hmm. you have to practice on yourself. It takes a lot of really dedicated intention to be doing the work that you're doing. You guys are natural for meditation practice. I'm sure many of the people who are listening this evening and who will be listening later on are already meditators because the two go hand in glove. But I invite people who are listening who perhaps just haven't done that piece of it, really open up your heart to the notion of a daily meditation practice, because it really does just open those channels and enhances the ability to get into alignment, to move into a place of, I believe, into a place of attunement with the client, to sense what the client needs, to allow that beautiful healing energy to flow through. It's just very, very powerful. And it is such a small investment of time for such a large payoff, really, for such a large benefit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it bears mentioning also that many of us have had clients on the table that are fearful of the relaxation response as it comes over them. And it takes time for them to build trust with their practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. as we attune with them through this fear or this emotional congestion that they have about willingness and allowing themselves to relax deeply in the presence of another, when we understand ourselves as meditators, what that feels like, and can describe it more intimately, what that deep relaxation is going to feel like as they experience it themselves with us there. That is also a unique perspective that will create a deeper relationship with our clients who are in that position, in that particular space, mind frame.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we're getting closer to the end of our call, and I want to give our callers a chance to talk with you and ask questions. Is there anything you wanted to do, Renee, before we move to that?
Well, why don't you let me go ahead and try just summarizing again. for those that came in a bit late, for those that came a bit late into the conversation. So with respect to the experiences of meditation, you know, we can, in a sense, we can expect through practice an increase in our self-awareness and expansion of our compassion, not only for ourselves, but for others. And then also, perhaps, over time, a deepening sense of spiritual connection and perhaps even a rollout of our life's purpose or a new clarity in our life's purpose. With respect to the barriers that Lynn mentioned, we probably all have them in some ways. Self-discipline is going to be one. But considering the fact we're all healing touch practitioners, energy medicine practitioners, as you mentioned, we've got that self-discipline. It's just having to redirect it in a slightly new way for our own benefit, for our own long-term health and wellness. With respect to strategies, perhaps, consistent practice is what it takes, you know, consistent practice. Sometimes, I think you mentioned having a spiritual teacher or a spiritual guide that would help us toe the line and keep us on track. For some of us, that would be helpful. And for some of us, we don't need that. I believe that's what you said. So all in all, this practice of meditation brings us many benefits, including the development of self-discipline, as well as the opportunity to cultivate a deeper personal spirituality. Captured that.
Well done. Yes, exactly.
Yes. Great. All righty.
Okay, so Dawn, what's going on our webcast? Can you sort of help us with that? What kind of questions are being asked?
Yeah, happy to. Dr. Paul Mack wants the citations to be provided. Can we put that in the forum?
Yes,
absolutely.
We could certainly do that.
Okay, because we're going to have a forum on this call where we can talk about things. And that was just his questions was getting those citations. So that would be a wonderful way of doing that. Thanks for asking that. And then Ruth Ann is asking, do the affirmations or the mantras interfere, Lynn, with the desired benefits that we've been talking about? And then how long do you recommend a meditation session last after as you're building up? What's your recommended length?
Okay, I'll address that first, and then I'm going to ask you to repeat the question about the mantra or the affirmations.
Sure.
When you're first beginning, many teachers suggest that you just start with 5 minutes. And this just allows one to begin the practice. And the dailiness and the dailiness is really, really important. Mm. So start with something really manageable. Start with something small. And the simplest way is to just put on a timer and use the breath as a focus. So sit quietly, breathe, focus on your breath, breathing in, breathing out.
That's it.
And that's a basic instruction for simple mindfulness meditation, which is very powerful meditation. And what can be very helpful over time is to move toward a longer period of time. 20 minutes every day is very good. 30 minutes every day is very good. Many of the people who are long-term meditation teachers tend to practice in the 40-minute range or more. So it's all over the board. And the most important thing is to do it.
Hmm. Okay, very good. The other part of her question was doing the type of meditation that includes affirmations and or mantras. In your opinion, do they interfere with the benefits that we're looking for?
So affirmations and mantra are two very different kinds of things, and I would need to know more about the affirmation.
Mm.
I will tackle But there's a type of meditation called loving kindness meditation, which is very well known. And people say to themselves a series of phrases. And they focus on themselves, they focus on a positive person, and then a neutral person, a negative person, and then the whole world, basically. That's a very quick synopsis. Now, that type of meditation, which arguably does have affirmations within it, they are ritual affirmations. This does increase the area of the brain that results in compassion. It's very powerful. What I did not include that type of meditation in my study, but it doesn't mean that that isn't good meditation. There are many types of meditation that have very significant benefits. What I found was that what I was seeing in the literature, in the scientific literature, was that it tended to be the silent meditation that seemed to be having the biggest positive effect. But I do not want to disparage mantra meditation, because the concentrated meditation also has tremendous positive effects, neurological, physiological, cognitive, and so on. I just didn't focus on those because I needed to make this dissertation happen. I needed to finish my research. And so I didn't have time to go into all of the every single kind of meditation. I know that when I was beginning to look into meditation and what type to do for my own self, very selfishly, I wanted to deal with silent meditation because from what I could see, it seemed to have very high levels of benefit. But
perfect. One other question I have, and that is, what do you recommend looking for in a teacher, a meditation teacher?
I recommend looking for a meditation teacher who practices every day.
Simple and profound, yeah.
Yep. And not somebody who just talks about it. So one of the ways to begin is to just look around and see who is doing meditation classes in your area, in your geographical area. There are going to be lots of them around. Another way is to look for teachers who resonate with you, who may be making their teachings available in other forms. So, for example, Tara Brach and Jack Kornfield, who are very well known, renowned teachers of meditation, have just put together a beautiful 8-week course on meditation that's available through Sounds True online. I have no financial link to them, by the way. And it's a beautiful teaching about meditation, and it goes through 8 weeks of practice. Another good teacher is Sharon Salzberg. She specializes in loving kindness meditation. So Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Tara Brach, Pema Chodron, John Kabat-Zinn. These are all teachers who have written extensively about everyday practice, and there are instructions on their website. There are instructions in the books they write, and those are very good places to begin because they are some of the most practiced teachers we know. And because they are Westerners, they're able to translate very profound experience of traditional meditation into language we can understand. So any of those people are good places to start.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you. And Renee, that's everything on the website.
Okay. All righty. Then what about our callers? Let's see. Looks like I've got a hand up on, from Cincinnati, Ohio. There's no name by it, so if that guest would like to ask their question. Are you there?
Mm-hmm. Shadab's hand has been up since early in the call. Maybe she didn't remember.
Okay, well, there's also somebody from Oregon, Lapeen, Oregon.
Lapine, Oregon?
It's Lapine, Oregon.
Yes.
Hi.
Mm-hmm. Hi.
Lynn? Is it Lynn? Is that your name?
Yes.
Yes. Lynn. I'm sorry, I was a few minutes late on the call. Lynn, I wanted to ask you, you have investigated and studied so many different types of meditation, and one of the things you did mention was cognitive decline, and having, I am a baby boomer, I am 69 years old, and I feel there is some cognitive decline. Many, many years ago, I started with transcendental meditation when 50-some years ago, maybe, when it was first presented in an area of Southern California, but I'm not sure that's the right one. But is there, would you say there was a you're general in saying be still, you know, do the breath, and but in your investigations, have you found one particular type of meditation that is good for cognitive decline?
The work that's being done in research is showing that something called mindfulness meditation is very powerful.
Wait a minute, I didn't quite understand you. Could you say it slowly?
Mindfulness meditation is very powerful and seems to protect against cognitive decline.
Okay.
However, there's a lot of good research about transcendental meditation as well. I didn't use transcendental meditators, but there's beautiful work done there. So TM is a very good way to go about things because of the regularity of that practice. It's a beautiful practice.
But that does involve a mantra, and at the
I
same
understand
time,
that, but it's a concentrative practice that is very compelling. You go very deep with that practice generally. So the most important thing is to do it every day. So you could give yourself a gift of doing the meditation every day. The reason that I focused on these silent forms was that, as I say, they seem to have a bigger effect.
Mm-hmm. Okay, no, I'm trying to meditate every day, but every time I meditate, I fall asleep.
Mm-hmm. It's not unusual. And what can be helpful is to stand up and meditate if you always fall asleep. Do you sit and meditate? Do you have a sitting posture or?
Pardon?
What I do is
I say my prayers, and then I end my prayers, and I ask God, as I understand Him, just to be with me and to help me be still and to help my mind be still and to be one with Him. And sometimes I can pull it off, and then the next thing I know, I'm asleep.
Right. Are you sitting down? What are you doing with your body when you're doing
Yes,
that?
I'm sitting down in a comfortable chair. It would be harder for me to stand because of back issues.
Okay. So see what you can do to give yourself permission to just be very intentional. You know, maybe do it first thing in the morning.
I do.
Okay. I don't know what to do to give you help in this, but often it can be helpful to stand. I understand you have back issues. Sometimes you might want to incorporate a walking meditation. That may be helpful.
Hmm. Okay, I'll think about it. Well, thank you, Lynn. I appreciate your feedback.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Good luck with your practice.
This is Dawn, Lynn. I heard Seth saying, and I don't remember where it came from, but Lonnie's question reminded me of it, and that is the saying that if you don't fall asleep, you haven't meditated deep enough. And if you do fall asleep, you have gone too deep. and that, you know, what we're trying to find, and I think you've just discussed it so beautifully, it is that perfect point that I think long-term meditators find so much easier than those of us that try it for a few days and then, a week later we want to do it again. That point is so beautiful to find. But then we're so human. We're also in this human body.
We absolutely are. We absolutely are. And that part of what's important here is to be really gentle with ourselves. Don't allow this to be one more place where we beat ourselves up. Be really, really gentle. And make sure that you're not looking for perfection, because there is no such thing, right? That the practice is the practice is the practice. There's a reason we call it practice. And if you can just set the timer for 5 minutes, that counts. Good.
Yeah.
It counts, you know? And I think that it's important to remember that. Like, we wouldn't, generally, if we're healthy people, we don't skip brushing our teeth, you know? And that can take 3 minutes or whatever. If you can just sort of think of this in gentle ways, like, you know, it's so much better for us to meditate for 20 minutes than it is to watch a television program. And this is a gift that we give ourselves that will give us a beautiful life for the rest of our lives, you know? And each time we practice, we're giving our bodies and our minds and our brains and our spirits a gift. And so this is one of the ways to think about this. This is a self-care thing. This is something that we're doing for ourselves, like a little tiny spirit massage for ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's just a precious thing that the universe is giving to us. And sometimes if we think of it as this gift that we're giving ourselves, that can help us move into a regular practice.
Wow, I think we will close it on that comment. That was wonderful, everyone. And we are almost out of time. I know sometime today, everyone, that we all received an email with a link to the Spotlight Forum. And Ramona and I and Don invite you to click through and to leave your comments and questions so that we can come together as a community and continue this conversation. If Lynn has time, she will join us as well. And in addition, for those of you who have questions subsequent to our interview this evening, you can reach Dr. Shaner through her website, www.eftpraxis.com. You know, Lynn, thank you so much. You are such a creative person. Your work, your research, you've brought some really important light to some important findings, especially about the benefits of meditation to our body, to our brains, to our hearts, to our minds, you know, and how these things come together to catalyze and prepare us to develop more as practitioners of energy medicine and, you know, to move on our own journey towards a deeper spiritual connection. So thank you so much for sharing your research. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us tonight.
It's been an honor to be here. Thank you. Thank you for including me this evening.
And for our listeners, you know, utilizing meditation can make a big difference to us personally. You want to keep it in mind that it doesn't matter how much you know if we don't apply it to our work in our lives. You know, Janet Mencken always said, do the work. So meditation is something to be practiced. You don't finish meditation. So hopefully that stood out from Dr. Shaner's interview this evening. And I think, Don, do you have anything else to close us down with?
I will. I thought there were at least two bumper stickers that I saw as we went through this interview with you, Dr. Lynn. And one of them that I loved was practice improves practice. I loved that, and I just see it as a bumper sticker. And then the other bumper sticker was, doing nothing does something. Meditate. And I felt like the way you said self-care and science, there's just so much that you fed us with. And I'm going to go back to my role as acting HTPA executive director, and invite listeners to join HTPA if you are not already a member. These interviews monthly that we are doing are just one of the free benefits you get. There will be continuing ed, 1 hour continuing education available for these calls throughout the year and even in some past calls that you get as a member at a discounted price. We also have another series, a completely different series of calls called Conversations That Matter. So please join HTPA. Tell your friends to join HTPA. It helps us to promote what we're doing, and as well as people like Dr. Lynn, who is doing something completely different, but is like a glove to our hand as we go through our work with Healing Touch. And next month, on February 10th, we will be interviewing Dr. Larry Dossey, internationally renowned author of the book, the recent book, One Mind. And we will be talking about energy practitioners and how they can benefit from plugging into the one mind in the universe. And that's all from me. Thank you, Renee and Ramona, for all you have done to make this call possible. And thank you, Dr. Lynn, for being here.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.